Welcome to Heart with Keisha B., the podcast that focuses on the journey of grief, healing, and overcoming unforeseen circumstances. Whether you're dealing with loss or life challenges, this is a podcast that you don't want to miss. I am your host, Keisha B. So take a deep breath, open your mind and your soul, and sit back as we embark on this journey together. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Heart to Heart with Keisha B., the podcast where we talk about grief, healing, and overcoming unforeseen circumstances. And if you are a regular follower or you are a new listener, as you know, this is a podcast that's going to uplift, inspire, and as I always say, we're going to focus on some uncomfortable conversations. And so if you're a little bit uncomfortable sometimes, I'm going to encourage you, don't leave, stay, because when you face uncomfortable situations, that's where change begins. And so today we have with us Maz. And so as I know, as all of my guests come with nothing but more than inspiration, Maz is going to give us some words of inspiration today as she shares her life. And so, Maz, how are you doing today?
Oh, I am fine. Thank you so much for having me here, Keisha. As I said before, the sun is shining and we rarely get that across the pond at this time of year. So I'm feeling blessed. Thank you.
That's wonderful. And so as we talk about where you are, where exactly are you where the sun is shining so bright that it's going to give us a ray of sunshine today when you share your message?
Yeah, well, geographically, I am across the pond in London, but the sun is shining in my head too. It has to be. So,
yes. Thank you for joining us today from London. As we know, this podcast not only touches just where you are, but as you stated, it's geographical. It's going to allow for people, no matter if you're in the United States or you are abroad, this message does not discriminate in regards to geographically where you are and or how change can make an impact worldwide. And so, as I stated, Maz, I want to thank you for being on this podcast. And so at this time, I'm going to turn it over to you to tell us a little bit about who is Maz.
That, Keisha, is the million-dollar question. because still evolving, but I'll give you a brief synopsis. So for those of you who are not familiar with me, I am Maz, and I wear many titles, as we all do, but yes, I'm a mother. I'm a single mother. I have, by trade, I'm a social worker in adult mental health. I'm also a well-being coach. I'm a speaker and an author, and I do many things in between. But right now, I'm just being Maz. So lovely to meet you all.
Thank you, Maz, for sharing so much of that. And just based upon your introduction, as far as who you are, me as the host of this show, I know for certain there's titles that you gave that I can relate to. So I know that if I can relate to those, I'm sure there's millions of folks who are going to watch this episode today that's going to also be able to relate to just those titles alone. And so as we go ahead into this episode, and you told us a little bit about your titles, let's go into how those titles have impacted your life. And let's start out first with just being a single mom. Has there been any challenges that you have faced throughout that course? So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you now.
Thank you. Yes. Being a single mother is not the easiest of jobs because it does literally take a village. They were right when it takes a village. It's not easy. And we aren't designed to be all things to all people. But I have tried. I have a daughter who is now grown up, or she thinks she's grown. She's been thinking she's grown for the last 10 years. She's going to be 20 this year and she's less dependent on me. But actually the job never ends. So there was no co-parenting. So her father is in another country and it was difficult. So effectively, I had to raise her by myself. We used to fly out back and forth to the Caribbean to see her father's side of the family and her father. But obviously, that's not sustainable long term. What I've found, apart from the stigma that still exists, actually, in 2025, you know, with people, oh, you're not married. Oh, you're divorced. And you know, especially not just in church, but general settings. They're like, oh, because they think something's wrong with you. Why are you single? You know, and or they'll say, you're one of these feminists. And I say, I'm not. I wouldn't choose this. But right. Yeah, what the, the difficulties, and you probably know this, with girls it's a bit different. I don't know about boys, I've never raised boys, but I call mine Chucky because she kind of switched. The teenage thing, they feel they're grown, they don't want to listen. And these Gen Zs are a different breed, Keisha. I'm telling you, they're yes. not made like they used to. They're different. But what they are is certainly very resilient, they'll make very good entrepreneurs. I certainly see that in my daughter, who's very strong-willed, because there can be a conflict of opinions, a battle of the wills. Mm-hmm. Trying to raise her in with my ethics, my faith, my, you know, or at least introducing that to her has been a struggle. But we're coming to the part now where I see the fruits of my labor, and it's really good. She's grown into a wonderful young woman who knows her own mind, and I have no doubt she'll be successful. So yeah, that's where we are with that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I listened to you describe the mother preteen, teen, grown woman. It mm-hmm. took me back to when I was raising my children. I do have one daughter and I do have two sons. And I just remember, you know, you have this strong-willed person that sometimes when you look in the mirror, looks just like you, right? And you're just trying to figure out, how do we do this thing? How do we do this mother-daughter? Because there's nothing more greater than seeing two powerful, impactful women mm-hmm. that are one of the same stand in front of you and be able to maneuver through life throughout all the stereotypes that you just mentioned, right? Of, you know, are you a feminist? Do you choose to be single? And like you say, who really chooses to be a single mom? Mm-hmm. I mean, there may be some folks, right? But I'm just like you. I know that that's not a choice that we choose to make. However, based upon, I always say this, based upon our DNA, it shows mm-hmm. that you've done a wonderful job of being able to raise your 20-year-old daughter throughout all the attitudes and throughout all the I know it all characteristics that sometimes these young ladies present. So again, it's not an easy job, but it is something that obviously we're designed to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's not for everyone. I just want to point out because especially in the work I do, but from my personal and professional standpoint, we assume that mothers and fathers do what they do. But not everybody has the capacity to do that, to love, even though it's a basic human thing. And we assume mm-hmm. that people will naturally want to do that, but no, some cannot. Some have their children and cannot love them, cannot receive love or find it difficult. And I mentioned that because for me, it is important to break generational traumas. Some will say generational curses or patterns that mm-hmm. have been repeated that I can see. So like you just mentioned, Keisha, I do see some of myself in my daughter, although she's the extreme 2.0. I'm like, who are you? Who raised you? So yeah, definitely. Yes, I have traits from my mother. Some of the more undesirable things that I think, oh gosh, sounded like my mother, my grandmother. That's not the thing that I would want to say. And it's cultural and socioeconomic things that come into play. So I just think once we know better, we try and do better. And that's why, leaving a legacy and her and for me, connecting with purpose is really essential in breaking those kind of curses and traumas.
Thank you for that, because I think so often, whether we recognize it or not, there's things that can resurface in our parenting that we often say, I'm not going to be like her. All right. Or when you was growing up, you look at your mom and think, oh God, this is so embarrassing. I can't believe she's acting like this. But then when you become a parent, we realize that some of those things begin to resurface. I know it has for me. If you were to give our audience some critical thinking opportunities of how does one begin to break some of those generational cycles and or curses or whatever one chooses to relate that to be.
Yeah. I'm mindful of the language. I say curses just because I know in the faith community, it can be perceived as that psychologically. Yeah. Just traumas and patterns mm-hmm. is what they are. And you know, all can be right at any one time. So what I would say, because before I started to know about things like epigenetics, for example, and how, even on a subconscious level, your children's children can be affected, even 10 generations before you. You knew nothing about that, but your great-great-great-grandmother made some kind of covenant, some kind of mm-hmm. vow, some kind of sacrifice, and it was you didn't know about it. Or maybe She struggled with alcohol. And you always think, well, why am I going through this? And it's just that you're going through the battles that perhaps they weren't able to overcome. And that repeats and repeats. You mentioned it is something about the DNA, but it's also a spiritual thing, I believe, as well. I would just advise people, and I'm talking to myself too, just to be curious. What is that thing that keeps coming up for you over and over again? And what do you intend to do about it? Because often we try and say, I don't think it's acceptable anymore just to say, well, that's just how I am. My mama drank. I like a drink. Because in the Caribbean, by the way, I use drink as an example. That's our culture. Listen, Jamaican, we love rum. If you come round to my house, Keisha, here, have a drink. We drink till we pass out. And we've normalized that. But I appreciate for some people, they'd be disgusted. They'd be thinking, oh my gosh, you're a bunch of drunks. So there are certain things, certain behaviors, even the hardness that, and again, it's cultural. And I think it's a leftover from a colonial legacy that we have in that we've had to be these strong Black women, which I don't subscribe to, by the way, that can leave us feeling, it does us a disservice because being strong is actually overrated. And what does that even look like anyway? But we can normalize our trauma. So what I would just say is that, please, if you know in yourself what is normal for you and what is not. And if something is problematic, you might not think so. You know, if I'm a drinker, you know, like the doctor asked me the other day, because they measure it in units, how much? And then he said, do you have a problem with drinking? I said, no, but other people might. So seeing those around you, how do people respond? And they may be wrong, but is it problematic? Is it affecting your functioning? Are you struggling to go to work? You can't get out of bed in the morning. Do you keep going after the same Mr. Wrong and you're ending up in these abusive relationships? Mm. Are you a workaholic? Perhaps you're not doing anything that is, you know, seen as really terrible, but perhaps you just like to spend, you're shopping all the time, you're working all the time, or you just might like a lot of sex. Who knows? You know in yourself what your particular struggle is. So all I would say is, and I'm not going to say don't do it, you shouldn't, you're a bad person. Just be curious. And for the sake of your children, even if you don't have children, for the sake of your relationships, because whether it's your husband, your partner, it affects every area. It affects your interactions with your colleagues at work, with your friendships, even with your creator, whether you believe in one or not, it affects all areas. So just get curious and see, what is that? I keep feeling pain when I'm pressed here. What is that trigger? Find out, and then that will lead on to the help that you need to get. So I hope that makes sense.
It does. You know, it brought up something again. That's one thing I like about this, having a podcast, is because as I talk to other folks, right, it allows me to look deep within myself and think of some things that maybe I had not identified with prior to speaking with someone. One of the things I have become very mindful of is how my upbringing with my biological mother at times showed up in my rearing of my children. And this is how. I didn't have a mother, meaning my mother, my biological mother, after the age of 8. And so as I was raised in a very loving home, when I had my own daughter, I didn't really know how to be a mom, right? I didn't know what that meant to give that unconditional love. And so as time has evolved, I see where that has been the hiccup, is because of what I was left. So one of the things that I consciously make sure that I do in rearing is that I make sure always to tell my children, I love you, right? Before I dismiss a phone call, before they're out of my presence, I think they always have known, I want to believe, I love them. But sometimes just hearing it puts that piece together. And so as I was able to break that generational cycle, what I did not get, I wanted to make sure that my children were able to get that. So that way, whenever they begin to rear their children, hopefully that pattern of just saying I love you will make a difference in their life as well as in someone else's life.
So true. And you know, Keisha, you just reminded me, that's a really good example, because I do the same. I'm a very tactile person anyway, and I know, you know, in terms of love languages, words of affirmation, I know my daughter likes money. No, she likes, you know, gifts. It's trying to show people the love That perhaps they think they're not getting in the way that they can receive it. So yes, I love you. Something that seems so simple that, like, again, that's what I mean by some of the things that we struggle with in our Jamaican household. It's not all, I don't want to generalize, but yeah, mm-hmm. And even saying things now, admitting when I'm wrong. So that would never happen in when I was growing up. You think my mom would say sorry? Sorry is right. Sorry and I love you were not words that that's crazy. You know, that would, I know my mother and certainly my grandmother would think that that was beneath them, but I recognize that, yeah, the times are changing, and I try my best, even when she feels that, no, you don't, you know, I hate you or whatever she's going through at that moment. She will never be able to accuse me of not, because she will look through and see the evidence. And that is why, you know, I mentioned I'm an author, but I've written the books. So again, that thing about receiving, because although she's quite young and she's young minded, mm-hmm. In the future, some of the life lessons that I've learned, she will be able to read. If she can't remember what I said, she can pick up the book, she can read, she can watch even this recording. She can draw her own conclusions about what that looks like and what healthy relationships are. And she can mm-hmm. do the same with her children and her relationships. So yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Keisha. It's the communication, full stop. Mm-hmm. Communication in our household. Yeah, I mean, it was growing up, children were to be seen and not heard. You couldn't express a view. You had to be mm-hmm. silent. So growing up, I was painfully shy. You wouldn't believe it now, but I really was. Maybe I'm overcompensating and I'm just like, I'm here. Woo! So yeah, and they're like, you're too much. So yeah, expression. So all the things I didn't have, and I don't mean like spoiling her. And yes, I do provide material things. I travel quite a lot. So I used to every year take her on holiday until she does her own thing. She has her own lifestyle. But yeah, I travel her abroad because that was one of the things I wanted her to value, to see other cultures. We'd go mm-hmm. overseas. She was always on the plane. She was never off the plane. So that was, yeah, one of the things, all the hobbies, sending her to dance lessons, all the things that I never got to have until she was old enough to choose her own path. So yes, all of these things, communications, experiences that we mm-hmm. never had, are important in terms of breaking those cycles.
Yes, yes. Very, very important. You know, I remember one time I was talking to a young girl and her mother was, in her terms, extra. Her mother had all these expectations of her. Mm-hmm. And so one day as we furthered into conversation, I asked her, I said, tell me about your grandmother. And she stopped and she looked at me. She says, what do you mean? I mm-hmm. said, tell me about your grandmother. She says, my grandmother was an alcoholic. I said, oh, so is there a fair chance that your grandmother's alcoholism raised your mother right. versus your grandmother raising your mother? I said, so a lot of what your mother may be doing, or the expectations she may have, may be based upon how she was reared or what she wanted in her life that someone could provide for her. So maybe she's just trying to break what was broken for her, you know? Right. And so I think, again, as we talk about, you know, what shows up in our parenting, sometimes we have to take a step back to realize, is it a matter that it's shown up because we're trying to break what was there, or because we're broken and that's all that we know?
Yeah.
So Maz, as we move further into who Maz is, share us a little bit about Maz's upbringing in regards to, as you know, this episode is about grief, healing, and overcoming unforeseen circumstances. And outside of just being a single mother, are there other areas of your life that focuses on grief, healing, and or overcoming unforeseen circumstances?
Yes, certainly. So actually, a lot of what I do is birthed from the adversity. Now, we all have that. But like I said, yeah, aside from the generational traumas that I wanted to break, because I am an advocate. So everything I do is around mental health and well-being. So which I think is essential, because actually, if we don't have a sense of at least mental well-being, then we cannot really excel in other areas. It affects our finances, our mm-hmm. relationships, just how we interact with people in general. So it's essential. It's not just nice to have, it's essential. And I say that because personally, having gone through, no, I won't say as a result of the upbringing, it was other circumstances, but I had a few depressive episodes, mm-hmm. a few dark souls of the night, which, you know, these situations that cause you to reflect, and sometimes you have a bit of an identity crisis. You mm-hmm. start to realize, especially when death is involved, you know, when you start to lose people, you think, oh my gosh, you know, and I mean, I've never thought I was invincible, but you start to reflect on your life, your health. Oh my mm-hmm. gosh, what am I doing? What's happening? What happens to me? Who's going to raise my kid if I drop down dead now? What's going to happen? And, you know, illness is prevalent, you know, all these things that make you just reflect. And part of that actually inspired me because I'm a voluntary grief counselor. Actually, I didn't mention that to you as well, but that's what I do. I do that for a couple of hours a week. And one of the things, because whether we physically lost someone or we're going through a transition, be it divorce or something, often that is the catalyst for change. And I know that's why you're doing this podcast and, yes. you know, everything you do. And I know you're going to talk about that. But for me, when I was down and having those depressive episodes and no one, you know, you kind of feel like you are literally going crazy, because if it wasn't other people that would, they try and be nice, but they'd have this toxic positivity thing. Oh, don't worry. You know, they're in a better place. And I'm like, shut your mouth. I didn't ask you that. Shut my face. You know, people mean well, but it's just like, or they don't allow you to grieve. Oh, you know, they think 2 weeks after the funeral, you should be over it. Or they think, mm-hmm. you know, you should just get yourself together. And I'm like, but who told you that? Why is there's this narrative, which is actually quite harmful? Again, it feeds into the strong black woman narrative, which mm-hmm. again, so don't cry. You know, imagine being at a funeral and people telling you, don't cry, don't let them see. Why not? That's the most appropriate place to cry. Thank you very much. For me, a culmination of all those things. And I just thought, there's people out there really suffering in silence. And it's a natural gift that I have, you know, for empathy and picking up, reading between the lines. So for me, that informed my practice, my work. So obviously I'm a social worker, work on a psychiatric ward. It's my job to set the captive free, quite literally. So yes. my friends, they mocked me. They said, so all those crazy people, you let them out? I said, yes, I let them out, because they don't need to be in bondage anymore. They need to be free. Mm-hmm. I need to be free. And so whether it's grief counseling, the psychiatric work, I actually became a coach, well-being coach, because we who work in the hospital, in the community, looking after people who are disadvantaged, no one really looks after us. So I thought, you know, we work, they work us. And I thought, we have to get off the plantation. So there needs to be something. So I typically coach women just like us, who are, so they're professional women, they've been through some stuff, and they often feel that they're not good enough, because that's what grief and trauma can do. It, despite our best efforts, we can be left feeling broken. Yes. We've been rejected. You start to wonder who you really are, even if you've, you know, had it, even if you were that person before. So anyway, I just decided, and that's why I wrote the book, I just didn't want anybody to have to suffer in silence, as I say. And that is why I do what I do, because it's awful. You know that place, I know you know. And my grief is different from your grief, but it's an awful, isolating place where everything is challenged, and it's just unlike anything that I've been before. And it comes in waves, and sometimes mm-hmm. even now, even years after certain events, like I say, certain triggers, certain things can put you back, and you think, oh, I thought I healed from that. And it's not that you didn't, but it's just that, you know, it's like an onion with layers mm-hmm. being peeled off, and some are exposed, you know, just like a scab on you know, you pick the scab and it might bleed a bit, and then it heals, and then you go through that process throughout your lifetime sometimes, because actually grief especially, it never really goes away. You get through some stuff, but you never quite get over it.
So you brought up something that I think we hear so often, like you say, you just need to be strong, right? Mm-hmm. And so it takes me back to when my son passed away, and you're right, I'm going to talk about it a little bit. When my son passed away, one of the hardest deaths I've ever encountered up to this point in my life. And I remember my sister looked at me and she said, sis, you just need to be strong. And I looked at her and I probably wanted to cuss her out, honestly. But I looked and I said, I don't have to be strong today. I just want to be human. That brings along the question, why is it that so many people think that as women, we must be strong versus just being human? And so then that takes me on to the aspect of, you know, all the things that people say, you need to get over it. Why are you still crying? All of these things. And then my response to that Maz, is this. If I didn't love my loved one, then I wouldn't cry. If I didn't love my loved one, then I wouldn't think about them and be triggered when a trigger comes about, right? And so when people say that, it almost makes me feel, and I'm sure it can make you feel the same way, what you're telling me is that I shouldn't love my loved one anymore, right? Yeah. If you're telling me I should be over it, if you're telling me I shouldn't cry, if you're telling me I should be strong, if you're telling me all of these unrealistic things that only translates to I should not love or think about my loved one anymore. And let's be real, that ain't true, right? That's not going to happen. And so yeah. I think what I hear you saying, and I would love those that are listening to understand, it's about changing the narrative. Mm. It's about realizing that the narrative that people are commonly saying, it's hurtful versus helpful.
That part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Keisha, I'm glad you mentioned that, because people mean well, they do, most of the time, unless they're being really vindictive. But the thing is, they give you advice that they would never take themselves. Imagine saying to somebody, they just lost their husband, oh, you'll find another one next week. It's like, what? Where is that acceptable to say that? But it's the same kind of thing that they're saying. And if they, sometimes people, they just waffle on and on. They don't know what to say. And I get that. They can be nervous. They may be just trying to comfort you. But sometimes it's like silence. Just be silent. Just let me know you're there for me. That's fine. If you don't know what to say, shut up. Don't put your foot in your mouth, because that's what you're doing. And then on the other extreme, Keisha, you get people ignoring you. So when you're going through those grieving moments and you're wondering, hang on, why is nobody supporting me? And they're doing that because they don't know what to say. They're like, oh, right. And it makes, and you making them feel uncomfortable, but that's their issue. Mm-hmm. Why do you feel uncomfortable at my tears? Why is it so offensive to you? What's wrong? What have you not addressed? I'm going to sit here and cry. I'm going to sit here and cuss. If you don't like it, get the hell out. That's what I say. I'm not adjusting, because I need to grieve. I need to get this out. I need to be able to express myself in a way, and I will not adjust it just because you feel uncomfortable. So definitely, I'm glad you mentioned that about being a help rather than, you know, being hurtful to people. Yeah. Because the other reason why it's essential, the language we use and how we interact with people, is because, especially in the mental health space, but even generally, I've lost some of my patients, even friends, to suicide. And I would hate to think that someone is my friend, my family member, and you felt you couldn't talk to me. You felt you had no way out. So that is why it's so important for me to create those safe spaces, to be in safe spaces. And so we need to stop condemning people, because we might not mean to, but through our language, through our actions, we're condemning them. Where every time you tell somebody not to to express this or that and to be strong, it's a burden. It's a heavy burden for them to carry. And we don't know if one day it might just be too much for them. So please, let's just walk alongside people rather than, you know, condemn them, even if we don't mean to. So, yeah.
Because here's the reality. We don't know when it could be us. Because when we talk about mental health, not everybody's born with mental health issues. Situations and circumstances can onset issues. So I think what I hear you saying is that we need to be careful. We need to place less judgment on those that we know and or don't know, because we never know when we may be that person and may need that additional support or that additional help. Because again, being that I'm in the mental health space as well, I know that sometimes it's situational and sometimes it's long term. So again, I think what I hear you saying as well is just be careful on how we place judgment on other folks, whether you know them or don't know them. I think a very good conversation for people to take on and to live on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, exactly that. You captured it well. And just to add that, by the way, when we talk about mental health, it's something that we all have, just like we all have physical health, spiritual health, we have an allocation. So just, you know, Keisha, you might break your leg, but I'm not going to go and talk about, Keisha got physical health problem. Nobody ever says that, do they? They just say, Keisha got a broken leg. They bring you some flowers and see you in the hospital or whatever. But when it comes to mental health, there's still that stigma, especially in our community, that, oh my gosh, stay away from her. She's crazy. And we need to stop that, especially when we're talking about loss in terms of grief from bereavement. Most of us have had a loss, so we should be able to relate to that. And you know you're not yourself when you have that kind of experience. It might be because you're physically ill. I know my friends who some of them have passed because of cancer. Of course, how do you expect to ever be the same? Whatever that is, for you that disrupts your way of thinking. And mental health is just that, the way you think, the way you act, the way you feel. And by virtue of the fact that we're all human beings, that includes you and me and everybody. You're not exempt. And we know that illnesses, disorders, whatever, feelings do not discriminate. So yeah, it's you, it's me. It's not the other person down the road. It's not the homeless guy in the shelter. It's you and it's me. Because you know, life has a way, doesn't it, Keisha, of making
us, it does,
humbling us, making us eat our words. So if you expect yourself to be strong on what have you, then somebody else will later down the line is going to treat you the same. And if you don't like it, then don't do it.
Right. And I think, you know, I heard you do a call of action, whether everyone else picked it up or not, I did. Don't overlook what you're feeling. Don't minimize it because of taboo. Don't minimize it because of things that we've heard in our home. What goes in a home stays in a home. I am one to believe this. If you're having heart issues, you'll go see a cardiologist. Right. If you're having mental health issues, we need not to just leave it at home. Okay, I'm about to go here. I make people feel uncomfortable sometimes. We need not just take it to church. Okay, because sometimes we hear people say, well, if you have all these issues, just take it to church. I'm not telling people not to do that. But what I'm also saying is inclusive of that, go see a professional. Go get you some help, because the more you and I know this, the more that it's left untreated, the worse it can become.
Yes.
Right? It may just be grief that caused you to be depressed, but the more it's untreated and you're lying in your bed a little bit longer than what you're normally lying in your bed and you're crying a little bit longer, it's okay to go see a doctor to get some help, whatever that help may be that the doctor prescribes that you need.
Yeah, it's true. And here in the UK, people got no excuse because the healthcare is free. It is free. You could go see a doctor, get I'm not saying you got to take pills or what have you, but if you know, like I said, we all know what's not normal for us. So having that conversation, because when we do that, we, as Brené Brown says, we give permission for others, and representation matters. It matters. Yes. So and I'm saying that because I don't know what it's like over there, but we, especially in the Black community, are overrepresented in mental health services, in criminal justice services. And I think a large part of that, aside from the stigma, is because we don't address it. We repress those feelings, like I gotta be strong, and it doesn't serve us. And the other thing is that people, whether we're caregivers, whether we're whatever the loss is, whatever capacity you're giving care, we wait till we're in crisis. Why would you do that? Would you wait till your leg is hanging off, your limbs are hanging off before before the thing gets infected? Go and see the doctor. Go and see whoever you need to see. So the same with our minds, with our well-being. Don't wait. Just like you wouldn't drive a car without gas. The thing's going to break down. How you expect the car to perform? You didn't put nothing in it. You didn't, you didn't take it to see the mechanic. It's falling apart. So let us invest, even a fraction of what we do with our cars and our beloved gadgets and things. Let us look after ourselves the same way. The responsibility is actually us. It's not the government. The government not going to look after you. No, even your own family are not really obliged necessarily to do. You owe it to you to do that. So do the work.
Yeah. You know, it takes me back to, I can remember when my son passed away and I took 2 months off work. You know, I did the FMLA thing, and when it was time for me to go back, I reassessed myself. I said, okay, I'm fine. I'm good. I can go back. And so I went back, and there were some things that I was encountering that was a trigger to me. And initially I didn't realize it until I did a self-assessment.
Right.
And what I'm about to say, I'm not encouraging other people to do this, but I want to just talk about how I tapped into myself. Once I realized what the trigger was, I remember going to my supervisor and I said, I don't think I can do this job anymore. And she says, what do you mean? I said, because when I realized that my mental health is struggling, I can't do it. We know ourselves before a lot of people may know. Once you realize that, take the necessary steps. Don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed. Don't feel like that there's something truly, truly wrong with you that's not possibly curable. Go get yourself some help and let someone else say what they can do for you versus you trying to figure it out for yourself. And when you said that, that just brought me back to the day when I had to decide I'm not in a good place. I wanted to be in a good place, but I wasn't. And only I knew that internally what I was feeling. Everybody else may have seen it, but I knew internally what I was feeling. It wasn't the best for me and or for anyone else.
Yeah.
So I got a question for you. So I know you had talked about being a well-being coach. You work in the mental health world, but you also talked about losing some people in your life. So talk about how the balance is for you, where you are professionally in a place where you have to help people overcome or focus on identifying what's going on. How does that impact your life, being that you had to look at yourself personally and professionally with healing?
Yeah, it can be. I'm very good at compartmentalizing, and that's not always a good thing. So it depends on the type of trauma, because especially in the mental health space, I mentioned suicide. I mentioned, yeah, we're dealing with people with lots of adverse childhood experiences, some of which mm-hmm. I can relate to, all manners of abuse, domestic violence, all kinds of things. So yeah, it can be quite triggering. This is the thing. This is why I've got a coach, by the way, and I've had therapy over the years, and I've had, deliverance and every kind of intervention going. I was like, give me, because I need all of it. And I still do. I still do, because I'm still a bit messed up. But I do that because I'm very good at, in my work, because I'm very good at working in a methodical way. So it's A, B, C, da, da, da. But there are occasionally some people will come along that will just challenge your whole sense of well-being. And in those times, that's why you need, you can't do this kind of work by yourself. You need others, and you have to take a step back, because it can rock your whole world. I'm very comfortable, Keisha, with people's pain, very, and it's probably because of my own. Mm-hmm. I'm comfortable with what a lot of people say. How do you do that work? I couldn't do it. How do you deal with the nonsense? And to me, it's not. I'm used to people threatening to kill me. I'm used to people trying to jump out of windows, and mm-hmm. people telling me that they're Jesus Christ and running naked. And to me, I'm just like, oh, what are you doing there? I can converse in a very matter of fact way. Perhaps I've become desensitized over the years, mm-hmm. but even with friends, but I'm very good at picking up on these things. So I guess for me, just through my own self-care, as I mentioned, through therapy, mm-hmm. or whether it's me traveling to decompress. Sometimes, Keisha, I feel like I want to go on a cliff, not to jump, but to mm-hmm. shout. And because people come, people even in the street, they tell me things, Keisha. I'm like, why did you tell me that? And I say to my clients, Eva, I say, listen, don't tell me. I don't want to hear nothing that you've done illegal. Don't tell right. me. I have a duty. Don't tell me nothing, because I feel they can. They confess. They want to confess all kind of, even murder and things. I'm like, shh, don't tell me. I don't want to know. So people throughout the years, and it is, I don't feel burdened with it, but I'm like, just, they're unburdened because they've told me, but I'm like, right. What? Yeah. And that comes about, especially when I'm dealing with some of the clients that we have are not who society would say. So we're talking about some sex offenders. We're talking about some people who have been murderers, who mm-hmm. have been done all kinds of things. And some of them are not sorry. And some of them, because you can feel empathy, can't you, for people who yes. are remorseful and they're repentant. But it's harder for people who are like, yeah, I'll do it again. I do it. Because some people, we have to appreciate that some people do get pleasure from hurting other people. Yeah. Right. Those are, whether you're narcissists, you're sociopaths, you're psychopaths. Right. That are actually in plain sight. But oh, as you can tell, my mind is like this constantly, even when I'm sleeping. It's overactive. So I have to release. And I like music and I like to dance. And another way I do it is through stand-up comedy. Because I didn't mention that. Sorry, so many times.
No, you didn't.
But I do that. So just in local pubs and clubs, I'm not, on the TV or nothing, but I like to laugh at myself. I do not take myself too seriously. And I take some of those traumas, although my therapist said, oh, Maz, you shouldn't do that. But I'm speaking from a place of scars rather than wounds. I take that mm-hmm. and use it for content in my stand-up comedy. So whether I'm talking about my, being raised in a Jamaican household, because I said we're all traumatized, and all the Caribbean people say, yeah, we know that. Yeah, we know when we used to get those beatings. We know. And that kind of thing, or anything. So that is what made me write my book. It's what makes me laugh at myself and make others laugh, and they're like, oh, mm-hmm. So that's all it is. The scars, and for you and for me, they can become our weapons. We don't mm-hmm. have to actually remain in that place. And yeah, we can be sad, but there are other times, because sometimes, especially with grief, I say this, Keisha, because people can feel guilty. When you look at a sunset, or and the person who you've lost is not there, you can feel guilty that you're moving on and that mm-hmm. you're laughing, or that you have a new partner, or you're doing something because you think, oh, they would have loved that, but they're not here. But I am, and I feel guilty. So yeah, all of those things through the grief process. It's important to take care of ourselves. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Just take care of ourselves. And it looks different for all of us. For you, it might not be therapy. It might be something else. I'm not sure, but just identify what's blocking you and just be curious enough to seek support and safe spaces.
Yeah, and it's good that you brought the fact that even though you are grieving, you can still do some of the things that people don't expect you to do. The laughing, the still enjoying life. And life may be different of enjoyment, but you still deserve to live a joyful life, even though it may be hard at times, right? And so it's funny when you talk about laughing. I don't consider myself a comedian in any way, shape, or form, but people who know me really know me. They may say there's times I do things that's funny, but that's what keeps me going. I'm not going to sit around crying all day, but I'm going to cry. I'm not going to isolate myself all the time, but sometimes I'm going to, because sometimes I need it, because folks can get on your nerve. But I just like to have a good time, right? If it's just cracking a joke, if it's doing something that has a different type of sense of humor than other people may have, if that's what's going to keep me well for that moment, guess what? I'm going to take it. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to enjoy it the best I can, right? And so I appreciate you just saying that, you know, sometimes you just laugh and you're a comedian and all these different things, because what you also said was that you face some trauma in your life and you're not letting that trauma take the best of you or have the best of your day-to-day being.
No, I try not to let it. And as I said, I mean, I lost a lot of people through various illnesses as well. Dementia, cancer, various, those are the main illnesses, but just unexpectedly, you know, if somebody, and I think the way it affects the way we grieve, depending on how that person died. And you know, and sometimes, I don't know if you've ever had this, Keisha, you know, sometimes, and it could be years later, but you just, you know, sometimes you're crying and you don't know. There's always a reason. I don't think it's because sometimes it's just the pressure, like it just builds up. And anger is a more familiar stage of the grieving process. It was for me anyway, because I can express anger. I feel, or at least I felt initially weak when I was crying, when I was sad, woe is me, that kind of, I was like, oh gosh, you know, look at, yeah. So all of that, but sometimes it can be years after the event, and it's not really from a place of pity or even saying why. It's just you're grieving what could have been. And it's just life. I've had to try and minimize me watching the news, because the death and the devastation, it gets to me after a while. But on a positive, Keisha, what I will say is what it makes me do, because I don't know if it's because we're getting older or what, but the time, I realize there's an urgency. Time seems to speed up. I mean, look, we're already in April. And I'm like, gosh, I had a bucket list. So that's my last friend who died of cancer. I know there were things that she wanted to do. And I said, I'm going to do them for you. I know it's no constellation. I said this before she died. I said, I know it's no constellation for you, because she wanted to go to Egypt and see all these things. She wanted to do so much. And it just made me realize that, you know, sometimes a lot of us, me included, we live on this someday aisle. We say someday I'll do this, I'll do. I'm like, that someday is today, today. Right. If I have the means, I'm going to do it. I'm not, because we don't have the luxury. Who knows where we'll be in 10, 20 years if we're not in war or whatever's going to go on. Do it right now if you can do it. And you don't, even if you got no resources or you think you haven't, there are provisions that find their way, because, you know, like they say, where there's a will, there's a way. Time is so precious. I cannot assume that I'll do it in 10 years. Let's do it now. And I'd rather, because I don't like to live with regrets, Keisha. I hate that. I feel so uncomfortable. So let me try and fail. And that's okay. So I can say, I can relax in my own conscious mind and say, oh, I did try that. It didn't work out, but at least I know. I always say, Keisha, it is better to know than to wonder. So, yeah.
You know, I think what I just heard you say as well, and I hope other people caught this, is that trauma and grief can shift you in a way that you may not have not recognized, right? And so what I hear you say is this, even though you encounter some trauma, even though you encounter some grief, what I heard you say was, I got to keep living. Like I had to be able to do things that maybe I would have not done had I not faced this current situation. And so I bring that up because so often we see grief as something negative because it does bring some negative feelings to surface, but there's some positivity that can come out of grief. And that's sort of why we're here today on this podcast, is because after losing my son, I said, I can't lie here in sorrow. I must find a way to begin turning my sorrow into service. And so I want to challenge our listeners today, and I always do a call of action, that if you're going through something right now, and we don't know what that is, right? Because we don't know who's watching, we don't know who's listening, but there's somebody right now that I'm sure that can relate to exactly what you just said. But our call of action is this: find a way to turn your sorrow into service. Begin living your life. Don't feel guilty about it. Doesn't mean that you're not going to cry, right? It doesn't mean that you're still not going to be sad. But find a way to find joy in your life, because we only get one to live. Yes. We don't know our expiration date. All we know right now is when we came onto this earth, but we don't know our expiration date. And so enjoy the moments in between before that expiration date catches, before we're aware of it.
Thank you.
That's what I just heard you just say.
Yes, exactly that. You took it and put it in a much more succinct way. It's so true. And just one more addition is just that, because I believe that we are here for a purpose. It's not by accident. So if you can, and whether you believe it or not, is that there are certain universal laws anyway. And I would just encourage people to find out what are you here for? What's, even though you might feel worthless, you might think, oh, nobody cares, whatever that is, but there is a purpose, and everything that you've been through actually is not in vain. It serves a purpose, and it's a kind of, I can only say this in retrospect because it didn't feel like it at the time, it's a refining kind of thing that makes you who you are. It's the basis of my book, sorry to say, I'll mention later, but the Kintsugi principle that in fact, we're not broken, but in the Japanese art form, when you break a piece of pottery or whatever, they glue it together with this golden vase. You may have seen it, the golden substance, and it creates something more beautiful. And it's just really a metaphor for life to say that this, in spite of our imperfections, in spite of our adversities and our traumas, we still hold our value in the same way that, Keisha, if you had a $50 note and it was in the mud, you ain't going to leave it. Well, I wouldn't. You can still spend it, right? You can still use that money, even though it's a bit dirty. But you dust that off, or even if it dropped in the toilet. If it dropped in the toilet, I'm putting my hand in there. I'm not leaving it, because $50 is $50 or pounds, euros, whatever. So I'm just trying to say that sometimes through our grief, we can forget, through our traumas, we forget who we are and forget that we are valuable. We are created for a purpose. And when we lose our identity, then we don't do what we're called to do. We don't do what we're meant to do. So that means that life is not feeling fulfilled. And then you start to say, and that's where you can get in that depressive, like I did. You start to think, well, life is meaningless. It's pointless. Why should I carry on? And that is because we forget what we were called to do, what we're on this earth to do. So, yeah.
And that's what we know in the mental health world is self-talk, right? Yeah. Sometimes we as people, what we allow our brains to magnify or to manifest sometimes can either be negative or positive. So it's just being cautious about what we tell ourselves, because if we will begin to believe it. And so that goes back into the affirmations. It's better to tell yourself a positive affirmation and do that on a daily basis than to believe all the negative thoughts that could appear within one's mind.
Yeah, I'll let you into a secret, Keisha. It's something I've struggled with even before, I think the grief compounded it. I wouldn't say I'm a pessimist. People say, why are you so pessimistic? I'm like, no, I'm a realist. I've never been an optimist. I tend to catastrophize, I do. My thinking at times can be very distorted. I can be paranoid because of my experience. I don't trust nobody. What are you talking to me for? Yeah, it's a trauma response. And that's why I need to work on it, because actually, you could normalize it and say, well, nobody should talk to me because that's just how it is. But I am aware of it, and I have to laugh at myself. I'm like, and that's why, that self-talk needs to be challenged and reframed, because affirmations is one way. But I would say for someone like me who was so entrenched, certain affirmations were not helpful because, you know, sometimes, you know, all this shadow work and you know, sometimes they'd be saying, look in the mirror and tell yourself, I love you. I couldn't say it because I didn't love myself at the time. Right. I couldn't say certain things because I was like, that's not true. And for some people that can be more damaging, it can have mm-hmm. the opposite effect. But I would just encourage people to, when I say reframe those intrusive negative thoughts, whatever it is, because I think we all have it, but we're on a spectrum. Yes. Even my daughter the other day, she says, oh, I'm so stupid. I'm like, why are you saying that? Don't say that. You haven't learned what you need to learn yet, but you can get there. You're capable, aren't you, mm-hmm. of learning new skills? I talk to her like that. I'm like, are you not ever going to learn anything in your life? I said, let's explore that. So even the clients or whoever, even my own self, I talked to myself the other day. I was in New York, and I hate getting lost because I feel like I should know, you know, Google Maps. I'm like, are you an idiot? That's what I'm saying to myself. I'm having this conversation. I'm like, are you an idiot? Are you stupid? You're acting like you're stupid. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I had no mask. I'm talking out loud, by the way. on the subway, but don't worry.
The big city of New York.
Yeah. But no, no one thought I was crazy because, you know, everybody else was talking to themselves. So I was like, no, Maz, it's okay. You know what you're doing. You got this. I was reassuring myself in that moment. So I'm just trying to say to people that, yeah, adopting a kind of growth mindset can be helpful. You don't have all the information you need now, but you're capable of learning and growing. So whatever you think of yourself right now, you're becoming, you're changing, and that's okay. Give yourself grace, the same kind of grace that you'd give to a child, a baby. When the baby's learning to walk, you don't condemn the baby because, hurry up, why can't you walk? The babies, you say, oh, you know. So please let us show ourselves self-compassion.
Right. I think that's the key word, giving yourself grace. Yes. I got to ask you this question. Being a well-being coach, I'm sure it can be challenging sometimes, right? Because we never know who we're going to coach and all those different things. Mm-hmm. But if I were an individual who wanted to come to Mass for coaching, walk me through that, right? I'm very uncomfortable. I'm very unsure. I even have a lot of trust issues, right? Because I got trauma that I'm bringing into your office. How would you as a coach help someone navigate this space to know that they're in the right place to make themselves better to move forward?
Often, I like to, initial consultation, I like to see what it is. What is the story? I'd say, Keisha, what is the story you're telling yourself about you or about this situation? Mm-hmm. Because that will determine every other thing. And often what you find with me, it's just human nature. We have some limiting beliefs in areas. We may have believed some lies about ourselves, about our abilities, about anything that means that we're stuck. So, you know, mm-hmm. If you identify a goal, so often some people don't know what their goals are. They don't know what their values are. And I think that's because we're on autopilot. We're so busy living life that nobody ever really, you know, stops to say, you know, Keisha, what do you really want out of life? What do you want? Nobody really cares. They're just like, just do what you need to do, Keisha. Just be the wife, be the mother. Where's my dinner, Keisha? Where's the dinner? Nobody really cares. And it's all very, a lot of our interactions are sort of transactional and superficial. So I'd get to the root. I always believe cause and effect. Let's get to the root. Why do you believe that, Keisha? Mm-hmm. What happened? We'd address all of that. We'd establish some goals if you have any. Maybe you don't have any because perhaps you're in a space where you're just grieving and you need to vent. And that's mm-hmm. fine. That has a place. But we're not going to stay in that place. Not with me anyway. Not if you're conscious.
Right.
Otherwise, you need to go and see a therapist. Go see a psychotherapist if you want to. There's a place for that, though. There is a place for that. But coaching is very future-focused, and we want to get you from out of that space, even incrementally. So that's what I do. And I would challenge the misconceptions, because a lot of people think that I tell them I'm not Jesus, you know, in case I say that, because I'm like, they're like, yeah, you're gonna get me a new house. You're going to get me a new house. I'm like, who told you that? I ain't doing it. You're going to do it. Because actually, I am providing the safe space. You actually have, you need to give yourself credit because you have the answers. This is how mm-hmm. I was coached, how I became a coach, because someone coached me and I was like, what's the coaching? What's that? That's like la la land. I don't deal with that. But when I saw the results, because there's something powerful about declaring things mm-hmm. verbally and writing them down, because it means they're more likely to happen. It becomes real. It's not just in your head. So that's what I like to do. And I love those eureka moments when I allow people through a guided conversation, and that's where the transformation happens. They're like, oh, I don't, you mean to tell me I don't have to stay in that job? Oh, I don't have to, no. And at the root of it, if I'm trying to summarize, because there's so many components. Overall, Keisha, is that we don't know our values many times. And even when we do, because I work with a lot of high achieving women, these are women that you would never, ever, you think you got it all together. Why? I even had a reverend, imagine. I'm like, I need to come to you for deliverance. Why are you coming to me? But she was overworked. She was, you know, I realized that the limiting belief, or one of many, is that she just wasn't good enough, that she had to keep performing, otherwise people will not accept her. And it's a people-pleasing thing that many people do. Again, another trauma response. Yes. And ultimately, people lack boundaries. When our boundaries are violated, we find ourselves in compromised situations in life, and then we get resentful to the people that perhaps we're caring for, and we don't feel able to communicate. We don't feel we have permission. So ultimately what I do in the end is I give them permission so that they can live their lives more authentically. It's about challenging the narrative and allowing them to work. I'm not advising, you know, I occasionally advise, but you're going to come up with the solutions, because you know, we've all had friends like that, Keisha, you know, the one, the girlfriend that's like, oh, is he cheating on me? He came home with the underwear was in his car. He had lipstick here. And come on, you
know the answer.
Yeah. Well, and another reason we don't give advice is because, you know, when you get back with him, you're going to blame me. You decide. Right. I'm not going to tell you to leave him. If you want to leave him, you leave him. But anyway, right. That's just an example.
Yeah. Yes. So again, thank you for giving an overview of, you know, what one would expect should they come see you. And again, as we know, every situation is going to be different based upon who they are. But if there was one piece of advice that you can give someone that's stuck in trauma, what would that be?
Yeah, you're okay where you are. It's okay. And I would just encourage a person, if you're coming to me, whoever, don't be too focused on future outcomes, because right now you might just need to breathe. You might just need to have a nap. Whatever it is that you need, just do that in the moment. For some people, it's literally hour by hour, or minute by minute. Don't think about tomorrow and, oh my gosh, I've got this, because you're going to overwhelm yourself. So please, again, give yourself grace, because you won't always be where you are now. Where you are now is not the final destination. So please take hope and give yourself grace, because you are changing. Just, you need rest. You need time to process all the traumatic events that have happened to you. So please allow yourself. I always, I know you said one piece of advice, but I always liken it to, grief especially is something that, if unaddressed, can come back with a vengeance. It will have you acting in ways that you don't want, and though you think you may have dealt with it. So it's a bit like if you have a physical trauma, again, I'll use the leg, you get run over, you know, you're not gonna run a marathon the next day. You go to physio, you might need to learn to walk. And it's a similar thing with the mind. When you've had an emotional trauma, like the loss of a loved one, the death, which is so final, by the way, there's, you know, your mind initially cannot comprehend that. It's shocking. Right. Sometimes you think the person's coming back, you can hear them, you can smell them, and you think, what? Mm-hmm. And it makes no sense. So in those moments, whether it is grief, you know, but any kind of grief, by the way, and any kind of trauma, is that you allow time to process, because you're probably going to be in shock for a while. And in the same way that you wouldn't run a marathon if you've been knocked down, you're not, as many of the people who come to me for grief counseling, they say, oh, I should be over it. And I'm like, oh, when did you lose the loved one? They say 2 weeks ago. I'm like, you should be over it. You haven't even had the funeral yet. What are you talking about? So that's what I mean. Please be patient with yourself and allow the process to do what it does.
I think that that's imperative for people to, again, recognize what they're really going through. And sometimes it's tough, right? But I think you brought up something that we talked about early on, as far as people thinking that they're supposed to be over it in X amount of time. And so that leads me to believe, does one believe that because the expectations that the world places on grief, or let's take it there, or expectations that family has placed upon you in other situations, you need to be strong. You need to be able to handle this. You need to be able to do this. And so when we face the unknown, those things are still in our brain, that we're supposed to be able to handle something quickly because that may have been imposed upon our life on something else that we faced in life. And so I think, again, it's just changing that narrative for us in our brain, realizing that sometimes generational cycles can revisit us in moments that we're not prepared for.
So true.
Yeah, yeah. So as we are getting closer to the end of this episode, again, I want to thank you for being very transparent on all the accolades that you hold and all the things that sometimes that we don't recognize that we deal with at times. And so with that, I cannot leave this episode without asking you, where can individuals find you at?
Mm-hmm. On the street. Most Friday nights, come check me.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're fine. I love it.
Where you can, you can find me. Listen, I'm online and I would encourage, feel free to connect. So Maz Alexander is my name. And I know you're going to put a link in afterwards. I'm on all the platforms. Maz Transformational Coaching on Instagram, Maz Alexander on LinkedIn. But if you just Google that, it should all come up. And my book, Arise Kintsugi Queens, is available on Amazon. So feel free to connect. And by the way, I do offer complimentary sessions. And I encourage everyone, it's like the whole thing about consultations and everything. It's like dating. It's like speed dating. You know, if I'm not for you, go to the next. If things are free as well, I'm a big advocate. Try this one, try that one, see which works for you.
Yes. So again, we want to thank you for being a guest today on Heart to Heart with Keisha B. And as I always say, again, if this is your first time listening to Heart, Keisha B., I'm going to challenge you to say, don't let this be your last. As you know, we focus on grief, healing and overcoming unforeseen circumstances. And as you may know, a lot of what we talk about may not be comfortable, but in order to make change in your life and in the world, we must focus on uncomfortable conversations. And so as always, you can continue to follow me on Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Pandora, and iHeartRadio. So I hope that you have enjoyed this episode of Heart to Heart with Keisha B. Have a great day. Thank you for tuning in to Heart with Keisha B. Remember, grief may shape our journey, but it doesn't define who we are. Healing is not a straight path, but with every step forward, you're creating space for hope, strength, and new beginnings. If today's episode brought you comfort or clarity, share it with someone who might need it too. Let's continue building this community of compassion and resilience together. Until next time, take care of your heart, your mind, and your soul. Honor your journey and always know that brighter days are ahead. I am Keisha B., and this has been Heart to Heart.